My name is Lynn, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm just so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm a great believer in sharing your experience, strength, and hope. What happened, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I've been sober a long time. I've been living with you people for 41 years now without drinking and using drugs. It has been the most fun I've ever had, and it's been filled with all kinds of blessings, and you know, I've been able to live life the way life is because of what you taught me. But I had to get here first, and you know, the theme of this meeting is willingness, and it took a real lot for me to become willing. So I grew up in, I was born in Oakland, California. I grew up in a family that had alcoholism, but I didn't know that. They didn't know that much about the disease. And so what I know as a child is the first emotion I ever felt was fear. And from the time I was a tiny little kid, it just seemed like I was nervous and afraid about everything. I understand that today. When you live with alcoholism, there's a lot to be afraid of. And if you're just a little kid and you don't know what the hell is happening, you should be afraid. I mean, it's like the big people that control your life are all out of control. And that's what I felt. And so I was afraid. And when I was 12 years old, my father got sent to prison for his drinking. And somewhere along there, my mother moved us to Salt Lake City. I don't know if I ever tasted alcohol, but somewhere after I moved to Salt Lake City, I found some kids who were like me. And I don't know if it was my first drink, but I know what was significant was it was the first time I got the feeling from alcohol. That feeling just went down the center of me, and all that fear that I'd lived with just sort of disappeared. It was like for the first time I could breathe, and I loved that feeling. I would have done anything to have that feeling every day in my life. And I got it from this thing, I don't know if it was, I think it was cherry slow gin. It doesn't matter what it was, if it would have been Clorox, I would have drank it to get that feeling. And I think that's a real good definition of an alcoholic right there. So that was when I was maybe 13 or 14. By the time I was 16, I dropped out of high school. I ran with kids that just drank and smoked and partied all the time. And actually, I was having blackouts. But nobody knew what that was, and I certainly didn't want to bring it up to anybody, but I got scared about the direction my life was going, and so I did the best thing I could think of, is I got married. I thought if I married somebody that, you know, I'd settle down, and I'd kind of get out of harm's way, because I was getting in a lot of trouble. So I got married when I was 17, and I was married. You know, we women have a big advantage. We get married and we get to change our name. And I thought that meant we got to change who we were. And so I thought when I was Mrs. Somebody Else and I moved back to California that I'd be different. But, you know, it seemed like I was still the same. And I still liked to drink alcohol. So then I got another bright idea. I decided that maybe if I had a baby, I'd be different. I'd feel better about myself. So I had my first child when I was 19 and my second when I was 21. And the reason I mention this is all these things I came to understand, I did because I wanted to feel better about who I was. And so it's all part of the disease. That's all I knew, was trying to make me okay. And shortly after that, the marriage ended. I had two children. I got a great job. Actually, when I got my first job, I got a job with a big corporation. And you know what I really liked about it is people went to lunch and had martinis. Oh, my God. I thought that was like grown-up drinking. That's what grown-up people do out in the world. And I was so excited. But I almost immediately found that if I started drinking at lunchtime, I didn't go back to work. There were different reasons why, always, but I had a great rationalizing mind. And so I quit drinking for a while until happy hour. But, you know, my disease was off and running. So I actually got very depressed. I started taking sleeping pills. I started seeing a psychiatrist. He prescribed some tranquilizers. Now, I want to tell you, when I went to see the psychiatrist, nobody in my family had ever been in therapy. And so I asked him, what do you think is wrong with me? And he says, well, I think you suffer from depression. And I said, okay. And he says, I'm going to give you some tranquilizers. I think that will help. Well, I'd just like to propose this to you. Now, I'm drinking all the time. Alcohol is a depressant. I'm taking sleeping pills. Sleeping pills are a depressant. And now I've seen a brilliant psychiatrist, and I'm going to take tranquilizers too. And tranquilizers are a depressant. So I just would like to say, I think if you took any person off the street and you put all those chemicals in them, they'd be depressed. Am I wrong? Anyway, I wanted him to give me an answer, and he didn't, so I decided I'd try to commit suicide. And I did take an overdose of pills. I ended up in a hospital. I actually did it 3 times because I really thought that somebody had the answer to what was wrong with me. And after the 3rd time, he suggested that I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was 27 years old. I was locked up after my 3rd suicide attempt, and I went to my 1st AA meeting. And I really believe that God works in strange and mysterious ways, because I didn't like anything I saw in AA. The first thing I heard was, well, the one thing I heard was that you guys didn't drink. That was not the solution I was looking for. I wanted some other kind of group. The group where they would teach me how to drink like other people. Really, what I wanted at that point in my life is I wanted somebody to show me how to drink, get up on the bar stool next to my friends, and drink the way they drank. And so when you told me you didn't drink, I just didn't want to come back. But I really believe that God does work in strange and mysterious ways. I found out there was a place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found out you didn't drink alcohol here. And 2 years later, after I really hit bottom, I had 8 more suicide attempts. My life was really sheer hell. I drank and used as much as I could, but actually I couldn't drink very much during my last 2 years. I think my body was so toxic that I just couldn't do it. But every time I drank, it'd be horrible. I'd end up somewhere locked up or in a 72-hour hold or, you know, I wouldn't even remember what happened. Anyway, in 1973, it happened again, and I this is my last drinking story. I came to in a hospital. I don't know how I got there. There was an ambulance bill. I was crazy. I said, you've got to put me over in the psych unit. I don't belong here. I wanted to get to the psych unit because any of you who've been in the psych unit know what it's about. It's about, you can smoke there, first of all, so you can... And you can talk to somebody all night. The nurses are there. They're there to talk to you. And they're going to give you a lot of pills. So I just wanted them to get me the psych unit. So they send me the psych unit. Now, if you had met me at this time in my life and you had asked me what was wrong with me, I would have told you that really the main problem in my life is that I've been unlucky in love. And it's just because the right guy hasn't come along. So I come to the next morning in the psych unit. I go to group. I'm sitting there. I looked across the room. There he was. Anyway, he said he was an engineer at Lockheed. That sounded so good. It sounded like a white picket fence, getting a normal life, somebody to watch out after my kids. So anyway, he got out on a pass, and I got out after 72 hours, and we began, God willing, what was the end of my last drunk. And about 2 weeks later, dragging my kids all over the countryside, I ended up calling an ambulance, and it took him away. And I was in my apartment, and the only real memory I have is I came to and I was on the phone talking to a woman from Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never known why I made the call or how I made the call. But somebody offered to come and pick me up and take me to a meeting. And, you know, Father Terry says that the first real spiritual experience we have is when we identify with another person. It is a spiritual event to identify with another alcoholic. And for me, this woman who called me, I identified with her. And it wasn't the big things. You know what it was? It was the simple stuff that happens here. For one thing, she lived around the corner from me. I didn't think I had any alcoholics in my neighborhood. So it was really important. Like, you live around the corner. Wow. There's somebody right near me who's an alcoholic. And then she had a child, and that was important because I was a single mother, and then she went to AA. And so I went to that meeting with her that night. There was me, her, and three old men. And I was really not, I should have been somewhere in a medical facility, but I was there, and I remember one of those men put his arms around me, and he said, "You don't ever have to be this way again if you don't want to." And, you know, I would have done anything to not be that way again. That was my first step into willingness. And they told me to go to a meeting the next day, and I did. I went to a meeting the next day, and I went to a meeting the next day. And 3 days later, somebody introduced me to the first three steps of AA. And I, when I got those first three steps, the way I was introduced to it is they said, some of us have to open that word up where we say we admitted we're powerless over alcohol. Some of us have to put a lot of stuff in there, all the chemicals we use to try and change how we feel. And she said, for some of us, it's pot and it's dope and it's pills and it's coke we snort and it's heroin. She says, some of us just have to put it all in there in the first step. And when she said that, I felt a twist inside of my gut. Like, shit. You know, when you know the truth, and I knew the truth, and I got it. So then she told me the second step. And the way she told me the second step, she looked me right in the eye. She said, the second step is that we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And then she looked me right in the eye, the way only AA people can do, and she says, "Do you believe in God?" I said, "What? What are you talking about?" So I started to tell her I'd been a Lutheran once. And she said, "No, no, no." She says, "Way before that, do you think when you were 3 years old, you were out playing, chasing a butterfly, the sun was shining, do you think you believed in God?" And she touched something inside of me, and I said, "I think maybe I did then." And she said, "That's good enough." She says, "The third step is we make a decision to turn our will and our life over the care of a higher power." She said, "God, as you understand." And then she quickly said, "Lynn, I don't think at this point you need to understand. You just need to make the decision." And again, I felt that twist inside of me, because this really meant letting go of all the chemicals. And that, you know, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. I felt it, and somehow I had the courage to act on it. And I went home and dumped out all the pills. And it was a Saturday night, and, you know, as I'm watching them go down the toilet, this little voice is saying, "Oh, man, you're screwed now. What are you going to do? You'll have to go to the ER tomorrow. You'll never get through all this." And that voice started in on me. And then I heard this other voice that said, "You're going to be okay now." I'd never heard that voice before. And again, I felt that sort of inside. And so that was the beginning of my journey into AA. And so, you know, I just didn't drink. For a long time, I just didn't drink. Eventually, when things would turn around and I didn't have the pink cloud, I started to work the 12 steps. I had a sponsor for a long time that didn't know she was my sponsor, because I was afraid to ask her, because if she said no, I would have been devastated. But it doesn't matter. She had what I wanted. I followed her around. I did what she did, and I got what she had. And that's the way AA works. And so I just want to wind it up by telling you. So I've been sober for 41 years now. And, you know, when I came in, I had these two little kids, and we were a real broken little family. We really were just all three of us tore apart everywhere. And willingness was probably the only thing I had going for me. Day in, day out, I was willing to come to you guys and to let you help me figure out how to have a better life for myself and my children. And I actually was sober a year and a half when somebody drugged me to Denver to the International Convention. I was sure I'd never come back to another one, and I haven't missed one since. Because you are the people that care for me, and now you care for my children. Because as time went on, my kids, they had to live out their stories. But today, both my kids live with an active love of a higher power. What more can you ask? That they have a love of a higher power, and they talk to their God, and they wait for advice from their God, and they trust that their God is taking care of them. And my youngest son, actually, if I had time, I'd tell you the whole story, but I don't. But he's here with his wife, and this is his third international convention. Yay, there he is. And one of the best things about the International Convention is he lives in Florida, I live in California, and we just know every 5 years, wherever you guys are, we're going to be there. And so this is truly, truly my family reunion here. And so as far as willingness goes, you know, I think the title of our program was Willingness, What You Need to Grow or something. You know, my willingness began at the bottom. That's where I had to be, where I was willing to really understand that I don't have any answers. I still don't today. I live my life with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings every day because I can now. And the people in AA in California and here are in my family. And now my family's with you guys. So I'm blessed. Thank you very much for letting me come.
Thank you, Lynn. And just a reminder for those who came late, the title of this meeting is called Willingness, an Essential of Growth. And that brings us to our second speaker today, Kevin from North Dakota.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kevin Kessler, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sober today by the living grace of God and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks to all the people from North Dakota. I think everybody's here. It's really great to see everybody. My sobriety date is August 31st, 1978. And I say that for two reasons. At my first international conference, it was in New Orleans, and Louis had drug a bunch of us down there. Louis is my first sponsor. Good to see you, Louis. You know, we had such a fantastic trip. It was a busload, two busloads from North Dakota and Minnesota and surrounding areas. There was 80 of us that took a bus all the way from Fargo, North Dakota to New Orleans. And when we got to the convention center, they were asking for volunteers, and so we sat down and we introduced like we do here this weekend. It's fantastic to see people from all over the world in so many different states represented at the conference. And so I'm visiting with this young lady, and I believe she was from Connecticut. So she said, well, when did you sober up? And I said, in August. I said, when did you sober up? August. What year? 1978. Well, me too. What day? August 31st. You know, it's like, if God couldn't do that, in a big world like that, that really helped my willingness to believe that I was in the right place. That I go across the world, halfway across the country, and meet somebody that's sober the exact same day as me. It was unbelievable for a new person in Alcoholics Anonymous. Lynn, thanks for going ahead and breaking the ice for all of us. Jen and I are pretty excited about being here as well. You know, when we share our experience, strength, and hope, you know, I prayed to my higher power, which I choose to call God today, to help me share a message, and I don't know what that message is going to be for you. But I know the message that I got when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life and continues to save my life on a daily basis. You know, most like every one of us, I was out of sorts when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was pretty cool, dapper, you know. My literature was comic books. And I was going to culinary school to be a chef, and I was passing out and burning Dinty Moore stew on the stove. That wasn't a very good way to start my chef career, right? So when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, things aren't very good in life, and mine wasn't very good. But I was attracted to you folks. I have an older brother, Tim, and he was already sober. And that guy was a wreck. You know, he and I went on a geographical cure. It was his. We went to Florida. We came through Georgia. I remember that. You know, and we're doing a little Marawonderful and a few other things. And, you know, we were flying before we had to, right? So, anyway, it was a long drive. So Alcoholics Anonymous started in my life before I quit drinking. Many of us may have had opportunities like that, and I certainly did. But I saw my brother change before my very eyes. I mean, he couldn't get a date to save his life. He had real blonde hair, long, you know, because that was back in that era where you had long hair. The good thing about North Dakota is we catch trends, but they're really late. You know, that was in the 60s, and we're in the 70s, right? Almost the 80s. Anyways, we thought we were the hippies of North Dakota, and we were. So, you know, we get to North Dakota down to Florida, and it's just a disaster. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm so grateful that you taught me how to share and communicate about making an amends and giving thanks to people in your life. Because there was a gentleman that I got to work for in Tampa Bay, Florida, that saved my life. His name, he's passed now, but his name was Frank Zudar. And we didn't have any money. And we got to Tampa Bay, and we're sleeping in my car. I remember the Hillsborough County Sheriff coming up, knocking on our window. He said, "What are you guys doing?" I said, "We're from North Dakota. We're lost, you know." And he said, "Well, you can't park here. You're going to get robbed or, you know, taken out in the back and shot or something, you know." And he said, "Go park where under a big light, you know." And, you know, those whole adventures when we're drinking and the chaos that it causes is something else. And it was for my brother and I. But shortly after that, we came back to our hometown or Fargo where we were living. And Tim ended up getting a DUI and he got into treatment. And he got into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know about the rest of you, but there's some things that start to happen after you meet people who are sober. And one of the things that happened with my brother is that he got involved in a very active meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you went to that home group, you know, instantly you were busy. You got active. And that was one of the first lessons I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is you have to be busy. And these guys were passionate. I mean, I wasn't even wanting to be sober, and they thought I did. I wouldn't want any part of that, you know. I wasn't looking to be with you and be happy and spiritual and all those good things. You know, I was partying down, you know. So here you are, and my brother, he brings all these people from Alcoholics Anonymous over. And I'm still drinking like a fish, you know. And I'm trying to be Chef Kessler, you know, burning stew in my home apartment. So Tim would have these conferences. They would have a small roundup. And these people from all over the place, our states, would come and stay with us. And I remember coming home from cooking that night just drunk. And here I am, you know, I can't even hardly talk. And so I didn't realize that my brother was having all these people stay, and they were sleeping in sleeping bags in our apartment. And I come waltzing in, just drunker and all skunk, and fall down amongst all these AA people. They're sober. Hi, here I am. And so they kind of propped me up and got me off to bed. And that wasn't the first time, though, that I was going to get sober. You know, all of us have that treacherous time, you know, the four hideous horsemen, and I certainly had my time because of my drinking and my using. You know, I was shaken and I total strangers, right? You know, that's not a good thing when you're 21 years old and you're shaking like that. And I had blood in my stool, and there was various things that I wasn't doing so good as a young man. That should be evidence that things aren't going very well, and it surely was evidence to me. So, Tim, you know, they get you at a weak time, and I wish they wouldn't do that. These people from AA are really tricky, and they get you when you're not ready, and he say, why don't you come to a meeting with me? And I agreed. It's like, why did I do that? So I went to a Sunday morning meeting, and it was an open meeting. They had speaker meetings there. I don't remember anything that was said. I was hungover, and I just didn't stay. You know, and I had to go back out to drink for some more time, and that's not uncommon to any of us in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, as this part of my life started to change and this wreckage started to keep on happening, and I was uncomfortable and I wasn't feeling good about myself, and I wasn't feeling good, frankly, about you either. You know, I don't know about the rest of you, but honesty wasn't part of my life. You know, I remember going home when I was young, and I needed some money. I'd have, you know, raises, like in the till where I worked for my brother-in-law and my sister in a Dairy Queen, or my mom, I wanted an allowance, and it was, hey, I'd just go to her purse and I'd just steal money out of her pocket, you know. And thank God you showed me how to give those amends later on when I got sober. But, you know, those are embarrassing things when you look at it. So here you are, my brother's sober, he's having fun. Life is changing for my brother, and it was truly a miracle in my life. Even through that fog and that haze that we all have, all of a sudden I started to recognize that his life's pretty good. Tim's life is better. He cut his hair. He even got a date. I thought, hey, AA works. I thought, man, that's a good deal. If my brother could get a date, maybe I should go to AA. I wasn't really doing really well in that way, you know. I'd call these girls up, you know, and you're drunk, you know, get a thick tongue and you can't talk, and they just hang up on you. So finally, I'm going to go to again, and I remember talking to Tim, and I said, well, if you have a family member or a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, they recommend that you go to Al-Anon. So I'm pitching this to my brother. I said, don't you think I should go to Al-Anon? You know, I'm kind of that kind of quiet guy, and, you know, he looks at me, and he doesn't miss a beat, and he goes, well, you might. But then he said, you know what, though? Why don't you talk to my sponsor? And that was Louie. So Louie comes over, and I'm pitching him hard. I said, you know what? You know, Tim's been sober, and I want to love my brother, and I want to help him because he's in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I should go to Al-Anon. Louie looks at me. He looks at me, well, you know, but I got to tell you one thing about Al-Anon. What's that? He goes, all the women and children go to Al-Anon, but all the men go to AA. So he pulled me right in. Okay, I'll go. I want to be a man. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the beauty of what we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is I walked into a scared young boy in a man's body. I was frightened beyond belief. I didn't feel comfortable at all. I was nervous. And yet, you people came up and you shook my hand. That willingness that you started to show me by your demonstration of what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous everywhere we go, especially this weekend where we can go and we're saying hi. This morning we met a couple that was from, where were they from, guys? Where? Scotland. Sorry, thanks, Fred. I appreciate that. There's another willing guy. But it's just fantastic. You know, we get to have that. You know, on the way down, we were very fortunate because we had Adam and Phil and, you know, myself and our token newcomer, Tony. And that willingness of the newcomer, because we love that. That inspiration that we get to see new people in our lives, and it reminds us instantly what we are like when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I got here, and through the instructions and the sharing, and I was not a very good student as far as academics went. I already explained to you my literature was a comic book, so I'm not a real voracious reader. Anyways, you showed me and you shared with me, and you talked about things that I needed to do and how it works. It was to become honest, open-minded, and willing. And if I could do those things, I had a chance maybe at this sobriety. And then you did some other things that have haunted me since I've came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You gave me definitions for words, like honesty. I thought I was pretty honest. Of course, I was a thief. And anything that was coming out of my mouth, you could tell I was lying. there was absolutely no truth in my talk whatsoever. And so you told me what the definition of honesty was. Honesty was a total absence of any intent to deceive. You know, it's like, oh, now what do I do? I couldn't open my mouth for the first 5 years I was sober. I didn't know how to say total absence of any intent to deceive. I was so bent on always telling you more than was really true, because I wanted to be better in your eyes. I wanted to be for you to look up to me, and there was no reason for you to do that. So I started down that journey on how it works. Then you talked about being willing. And Don, and our grand sponsor, he brought so many wonderful gifts to us. He brought us the idea of serving others and being empty of self, all the things that were described at our meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to have a home group, and I had to have a job at my home group. And if you didn't do that, you just weren't part of it. And you wanted to be part of that group because they were happy, joyous, and free. They were living a kind of lifestyle that I wanted to live because I wasn't feeling very good about who I was and what I was. And so you started to do those things. And Don talked about praying for God's will for him and the strength to carry it out. Period, end of quote. And that's all he would pray for. I was praying for... He was driving a Mercedes-Benz. I was praying for one of those. I thought, well, that looks... I want what he has. You know, he's got a Mercedes-Benz. Can I have that, God? You know, give me that. And I was praying for her or her, you know. At these roundups, that was really a challenge because all of a sudden I'd be in love and I couldn't hear what the speaker said because I was in love. You know, look at her. How do you know she loves me? She looked at me. Yeah. So all these different things started to change my life. As we progress in our fellowship, as we progress and stay here, if I don't have new people in my life, I kind of forget what I was like when I got here. I forget that I had to become willing and do a lot of different things. Take those phone calls at any hour of the day and night. And they do come, and thank God they come. That relationship that's been built with a higher power that I truly, truly love, I've had to remain willing to serve that higher power. And there's things that are difficult. This last October, one of my best friends, a childhood friend, not an Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, we've been very close our whole lives since we've been little children. And anyways, I had a minor surgery, and he came to the hospital, picked me up. And at that time, I took him out to lunch after my surgery, and then he took me home. Later that night, his girlfriend called to say that my friend had passed away. So you look at those things and you think, you know, is that a time to leave Alcoholics Anonymous and say the heck with it? Or is that a time that, thank God, God's given me the strength to be a friend to my friend, to be a friend to his family and to help them? So there's all kinds of incidences and tragic things that go on in our lives that through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to be an example, hopefully, of what it is to be a son. You know, I've made amends to my parents. I remember talking to my mom. Mom, you know, remember that money I used to take out of your purse? Yeah, she said, did you pay it back? In which I did, right? But she called me out. She's 91 years old, and I love my mother. You know, she's just fantastic. So there's all kinds of value that we have in our sobrieties that I look forward to each and every day. I wanted to thank the guys that got on our knees this morning and we did the third step prayer together. We read page 86, 87, and 88. And it's the foundation for my day. I need that blueprint to live this day because I don't know what it's going to do. I don't know what's going to come at me today. None of us do. But if I have that in my with me, at least I can pause when agitated or doubtful and ask God what direction he wants me to take with whatever situation I'm dealing with. And I'm so blessed today to have to be married and have two beautiful adult daughters that we love dearly. And that would have never, ever, ever happened had I not come to Alcoholics Anonymous that first day and stayed committed to this fellowship. You know, I'm just looking forward to hearing what the rest of the speakers have to say today. And if you've not been to that Frank ceremony, please make sure to come tonight. It's unbelievable what takes place at the flag ceremony in the Fargo, or at the Fargo Dome, the Georgia Dome tonight. You know, so in partying, it's a great opportunity. I hope everybody has a chance to network with one another and get some phone numbers and talk to people where you might be wanting to travel someday. I've been able to travel the world, and it was always those dreams I've had to grow and to go and do all these different things, and I've been able to do that because of what you shared with me that very first meeting. So remember the newcomer, like Dr. Bob says, keep it simple. Always give that newcomer a pat on the back, because that's what makes me able to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really grateful this afternoon to be here and to be in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. And this brings us to our final speaker today, Jen G. from Florida.
Hi, my name is Jen, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jen.
I just want to say, you guys are beautiful right now. Very attractive bunch. I've never seen so many smiles before, and it's so refreshing. my sobriety date is March 1st of 2006. Thank you. My home group is the Lake Worth Young People's Group, and it's the best meeting in the world, I'll tell you that. So if you're ever in Palm Beach County, Florida, look us up, and we'll welcome you with open arms. So, and we might do a soul train at the door, so don't feel intimidated by that. I have the most amazing sponsor, and she's a woman that I look up to so much, and a woman that I want to be when I get older. So she's a really good example. So willingness. So before I started drinking, from a really young age, 6 years old, very young, I felt so uncomfortable in my skin. You know, I had that, you know, feeling, I was never content at all. I just felt like I was crawling out of my skin. I felt like I was defective, that I was made wrong. And you know what I mean? I shouldn't be here, really. When I think of that now, I feel really sad. I feel really sad. And, I felt defective, and I was willing to go to any lengths to fix myself. Whatever insecurity I felt, character defect or any of those feelings kind of came up, or emotions, I was impulsive and I would act on them because I thought I knew the answers, and I thought I ran the show, and I thought I could fix myself. And I was willing to suffer the consequences of those things that I did and those behaviors that I acted upon. And, I suffered great consequences. And even before I started drinking, I did a lot of damage to many, many people. my family especially. I found alcohol right after I'd been institutionalized for a few months, and my first drink was out of resentment against my father. I felt like it was his fault keeping me in the institution, and even though he loved me and he was trying to save my life, you know, again, it was all about me. And so I was in this institution, and as soon as I got out, I was an outpatient. And, you know, I was with some neighborhood guys, and we used to drink in a shed in New Jersey with a stinky couch, a bar light, and twinkle lights. And they were drinkers, and they knew my father was very stern about not drinking underage and not getting in trouble. And, you know, he's definitely said he'd kick my butt if I, you know, did those things. And, you know, I was willing, you know what I mean, to be the good daughter that he wanted to be, even though I hated myself. And so I was resentful, and I was willing to suffer those consequences of him being mad at me, maybe having my butt kicked, whatever it was. And once I took that drink, I felt so amazing. I felt complete serenity at that time. And I thought that alcohol was the solution to my problems. And I thought that alcohol could fix me. I felt fixed. I felt a sense of purpose. I felt alive for the first time. I felt okay with myself, you know? And, you know, so any time that I had the opportunity, any time that I could steal liquor from, you know, my parents or friends' parents, I was doing it, you know, and willing to get caught, you know, willing to pay those consequences too. And, you know, and then I also thought about, you know, how I was going to drink every day, you know. I didn't have the opportunity of drinking every day. I was 16 years old, and I did not get a fake ID. But, you know, I just couldn't stop drinking after I had that first drink. You know, just like the doctor's opinion says in the big book. You know, I just couldn't stop. I wanted another. I thought one more was going to make me feel even better, you know. And, you know, and then when I wasn't drinking and when I didn't have the chance to get alcohol, all I was thinking of how I was going to get it, what I was going to do, when I was going to drink it, you know. You know, and I learned when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that that's what alcoholism is, you know. Just because I ended up getting sober at 18 years old, and just because I never had a legal drink or, you know, was a binge drinker, and I didn't drink every day, I was told that that's what alcoholism is, you know, because I read, you know, because I had a great sponsor who brought me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page. She even gave me, you know, the definitions of the vocabulary that was in there, because it was a little, I thought I was educated, but that was a little above my pay grade. You know, and when I was drinking, before I started drinking, I had so much, you know what I mean, high aspirations for myself, and I wanted to be, you know what I mean, this powerhouse of a woman someday, and be super successful, just like my father, and all those things. I had so many goals and ideals and all these things, you know. And then once I started drinking, little by little, I started lowering those goals and expectations, you know, so I could drink more. And because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't in the plan anymore. You know, it was all about alcohol then. You know what I mean? And I was off to the races. It got to the point, I only was in college in Philadelphia for about a semester and not even a half. Like maybe like I was in 2 weeks, a semester in 2 weeks. I left on medical leave. I got to a point where very quickly that I didn't think that I could live without alcohol or live with alcohol anymore. And I was completely hopeless. And I was willing to, you know, kind of carry through that supreme sacrifice of committing suicide. And I tried to jump out of my 16-story balcony window in my dorm in Center City, Philadelphia. And I was standing there and just completely dead inside. And my roommate, she barged through the door, and she saw that I was standing out there and grabbed me and pulled me to the floor. And she just started crying, and she was so upset. And I couldn't even cry. And I was a crier. I mean, I cry over anything. I cry on demand. You know, I felt I was a great actress. And I couldn't even cry. I was so dead inside, you know. And I was pissed that she took me off there and I didn't have the guts to do it, you know, quicker. You know, that I was chicken. And, you know, I pretty much just drank myself, you know what I mean, to a blackout and passed out. You know, and that's the only way that I could stop drinking, you know. I mean, running out of alcohol, I was willing to do anything to get more, you know. But once I hit that blackout and passed out, you know, that was the only thing that stopped me from drinking. And I'd wake up and I'm still drunk, you know, that kind of thing. So I drank myself for the next 2 days, pretty much just around the clock when I woke up, you know, to when I passed out. And I'd been seeing a therapist since I was 10 years old, and the same therapist. And she was very patient with me and very kind, very loving. She considers herself, and I consider her, a friend and a supporter of Alcoholics Anonymous. She's not in the program, and it wasn't for substance abuse. But amazing woman. And I want to be like her one day, you know, amazing woman. And she knew that I had a drinking problem. She had kind of told me about it, like, hey, why don't you lay off the drinking? Didn't really hear that, you know, not willing to take that suggestion at all, even though I respected her. Wasn't willing to do that. I'd lie about my drinking, you know, and I would tell her that, you know, oh, I didn't party tonight, like, yay for me, you know, and kind of reap that reward, you know, and that recognition from her, and which made me feel good. And so, you know, she knew it was like a couple weeks prior to my intervention, and she had said, like, why don't you go to AA, you know what I mean? Go to an open meeting, look it up in Philadelphia, go to an open meeting, and if you want to say that you're an alcoholic or you have the desire to stop drinking, that's your choice, but you don't have to. So I go to this meeting, and I completely relate to the speaker. So I raised my hand to share. They asked, you know what I mean, if anybody wants to share. And I stood up at the back of the meeting. It wasn't a thing that you stood up in the meeting. But I stood up and I said, I am here because I want you guys to teach me how to be successful at drinking. And whenever I hear that at a meeting, I have this, like, such heartwarming feeling inside, because I know exactly what that feels like. I was exactly there where I wanted you to teach me to be a successful drinker, you know, to drink, to not be a hot mess, you know, when I was drinking, falling over, you know, puke everywhere. I wanted you guys to teach me how to drink like a lady, you know. And they all laughed, and they had a line afterwards, and each one of them gave me a hug. And all the women in the meeting, they took a pamphlet and they put their name and their number, and each one said, you can call me anytime. Well, that night I drank. You know, I still thought that I could drink like a normal person. You know, and more about alcoholism, it talks about that, of smashing that idea that you can drink in safety. And I wasn't convinced. You know, I could identify, but I wasn't convinced yet. So I drank into a blackout that night. I didn't call anybody. You know, and a friend came with me, and she had gotten a DUI, and she was sentenced to AA, to go to three AA meetings. So I, you know, told everyone at the dorms that I was there to support her, you know, and be a good friend. So that gave me more recognition as well, boosted my ego and validation. And, you know, and then I tried to commit suicide. Intervention with my family. My parents were called. I'd signed a waiver saying that they could communicate with my family, even though I was 18 years old. Stupidest thing in the world at the time, but I'm very grateful that I did that. And so they had told my parents, they contacted my parents, and they had proclaimed that I was a safety hazard to live in the dorms. And they didn't say that, like, oh, you can medically withdraw or anything like that. And my mom was very upset about that, that they, you know, kicked me out without giving me an option of going to getting help or even the counseling department, you know what I mean? So anyway, you know, my therapist, she had a letter. She had an intervention letter. She was part of the intervention, which was really interesting. I always see, like, them facilitating the intervention, you know, on TV and all that, you know, the show Intervention. And she's crying, too, you know. And when a professional is crying, you know that that's rough. That's deep stuff right there. You know, they can't hold it together. My dad's crying. My mom's crying. There's all tears. I couldn't cry. I was dead inside, you know. And this woman promised me, you know, she offered, you know, she said, I would like you to go to a facility. You can go to either, like, Tucson or I don't even know where it was, ride horses, you know, do equine therapy, all that kind of stuff. Or, like, this posh, you know what I mean, you know, bourgeois, you know, I don't know. Or you can go to Palm Beach, Florida. And my we had vacationed there many times, and it was close. It was the East Coast, and I was from New Jersey. And my grandparents were snowbirds. So I was familiar with the area, and I could see family, you know. And it was a quick flight for my parents. And so I was like, oh, Palm Beach. You know, I'll go to Palm Beach. You know, it'll be a nice vacation. It was springtime, so it was, you know, it was in March. So I was like, sure, I'll get a tan. You know, it's cold now, you know what I mean? Like, it's snowing some days. So, you know, I decided to go to Palm Beach, and I was willing. Oh, she promised me, which I also believe that you shouldn't promise children or adolescents or even adults, that promise them anything that you can't deliver. You know, I know that now working with children. And so, you know, my therapist, she promised me that if I worked the program completely and got honest with myself and was open-minded and willing, that I would be happy and I would start to love myself. And I didn't think that was possible, but I wanted to be happy really bad. And I believed this woman at this point. I was at that hopeless spot where I believed her. And so I went, you know. I don't remember anything that happened. I know that I was a good peer leader at the time. You know, my parents wanted to rent an apartment in Philadelphia so I could live with my mom. She would make sure that I stayed sober, and which was a really bad idea. And I knew that it would do more harm than good in our family. It would tear us apart. And So they suggested I go to a halfway house. So I did that. And, you know, I wasn't really giving my all to AA. After a spiritual awakening I had, that I felt that hopelessness again, even after I stopped drinking. You know what I mean? I didn't have the solution. You know, the solution to my problems was always alcohol, and I didn't have that spiritual, you know, solution. And I made a commitment to actually join Alcoholics Anonymous, to learn about what it was, to get a sponsor, start the steps, become a service, you know, and try to create this or start to develop a relationship with this higher power, God, whatever you want to call it. And so I was willing, you know, and I was very able. I didn't have a job or anything like that, and I was, you know, still 18 years old. So I had a lot of time on my hands, a lot of free time. So, you know, so I did the deal. And we call it, my friends and I, we call it doing the deal, you know, and that's all of it. Or trying to do it, you know, putting your heart into that. And so I did the deal, and that hope, that once hope turned into trust with a higher power, which turned into faith, you know, and that faith has enabled me to be able to walk through the challenges that I've had. You know, when I was 3 years sober, I was diagnosed with MS, and I was told by the doctor, who was crying when he, you know, told me, they thought I had like an aneurysm or something in my brain. They thought I was like going to die real soon. And I was completely paralyzed from, like, you know, my legs down. And they transported me to a trauma hospital. And I was there for a long time. And so they did all this work up on me. And but at that moment, when I was told that, I was by myself, completely by myself, in that hospital room. And I had this overwhelming feeling that I was going to be okay. Whatever happened to me, whatever was going to happen to me, you know, if I died, you know what I mean, if I was going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life, whatever was going to happen to me, it's God's plan. And I remember feeling, I've done good. I've done good. I've helped people. I started to change my life. I've been a good daughter. I've been a good granddaughter. I've been a good sister. I've been a good friend, and I've done good. And if that's my path, that's my path. You know, and kind of one more thing, you know, and I went through that whole process, that grieving process, you know, used the cane for 2 years, the first 2 years, was able to kind of power through that and, you know, come into remission with those things. And sometimes I experience, you know, the relapses and stuff and can't walk, but, you know, that's cool. You know, I rock a leopard cane sometimes, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's unwanted attention, but, you know, it's just part of the deal. And it's my new life, and I have to experience that powerlessness whenever it happens, you know. But I know at the end of the day that God's got a plan, you know. Today I was able to go back to school. I was able to get my AA degree, even though I failed out of even art school at, like, 3 years sober, like right before I went got MS. So I hear people saying, like, oh, I've never heard anybody fail out of school sober. This girl did. You know what I mean? This girl did. So failed out of art school, took a year off, got a job, and started participating in life, and became a productive member of society, you know, making a paycheck. And so I decided to go back to school, you know, after I was diagnosed with MS. And my parents were very supportive with that. You know, it got to a point I was just trudging that road, you know what I mean, just, you know, doing the deal with school. And I was able to go to grad school. I got accepted into grad school in this honors program, this escalated program to be a child therapist. And one class before I was supposed to graduate, you know, due to a low grade, a failing grade, I wasn't able to graduate. And I got a recommended dismissal from the graduate program completely. And I got that dismissal the exact day I was sitting at the beach and I was talking to God. And I said, I'm willing to do anything during this process to not lose myself, to not jeopardize my sobriety, and to not, like, to still take care of myself, like my health. And because I believe that's God's will for me, you know what I mean, to be of service. And those things help me be of service. And so I got that dismissal literally an hour before I got the email asking me to speak on willingness. And if that wasn't a sign of, like, you know, like completely turning it over, and, you know, if that wasn't a sign, and I just started cracking up by myself on the beach, you know, text my sponsor, you know, took a photo of it, you know, a screenshot. And, you know, so, like, God is good. And she's like, God is always good. You know what I mean? You better correct that. And, you know, I am just so blessed to be here today and to be sober, you know. And I just want to thank you for participating in my sobriety today. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, I'd like to thank all the speakers, Jen, Kevin, and Lynn. Thank you very much.